Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. On yesterday's show, we spoke with an expert on the Quran and Islam's Hadith. Those two sources are their only authoritative ancient sources for Muhammad's life. And we learned that Muhammad was a murderer, an adulterer, a rapist, a child molester, and that he killed a greater percentage of Jews within his reach than did Adolf Hitler. Now, that expert, Craig Wynn, has done about 1,000 hours of talk radio since 9/11. He is the author of Tea with Terrorists and his newest book, Prophet of Doom, Islam's Terrorist Dogma in Muhammad's Own Words. Wow. Craig Wynn, welcome back to Bob Enyart Live.
It's my pleasure to be back with you today, Bob.
Craig, yesterday the show was great, very informative, and one of the things I learned was Muhammad's two phases in his life in Mecca and Medina, and the Quran reflects those two periods. And when he went to Medina, he had a band of men who were willing to use the sword against all of humanity, if necessary, to convert them to Muhammad's teachings.
Right. Muhammad didn't change, but he was empowered by men with arms. So, as often with evil, when evil unites with power, it becomes an extraordinarily deadly thing. So Muhammad, in his first 90 surahs that were revealed in Mecca, was just simply a demon-possessed man who had a disgusting view of the world and of God. And when he was run out of town following the satanic verses, a real episode in Muhammad's life, he teamed up with a group of violent men who pledged to wage war against all mankind, and from that point on, all that is Islam becomes little more than a river of blood.
Now, wait a minute, Satanic Verses, I thought that was a book by Salman Rushdie.
Well, Salman Rushdie entitled his book after the episode in Muhammad's life. It's really the pivotal point in Muhammad's revelations. What most people do not know is that Allah was not the first God of the Quran. The first God was a nameless Lord. As you probably know in studying the Hebrew scriptures, Lord is the term that is applied to Baal, who is was the definitive sun god of, therefore, satanic idol of those in Canaan, and really a derivative of what came out of Babylon. But the Jews, when they had been put in captivity by the Babylonians, Jews were originally called Yahudi, which means followers of Yah. The Babylonians, being satanic, defamed the Jews and their God by calling them Yahus, and so the Jews made it a capital offense. They were so offended by that to even say Yahweh's name, and therefore they wrote Yahweh's name out of his own scriptures and replaced it with the word Adonai, Lord. And so when Muhammad was trying to infer that that his God was the monotheistic God of the Jews, he used the term Lord in his first 20 surahs, not knowing the difference. In the next 20 to 30 surahs, Muhammad used Ar-Rahman, which is a derivative of the Persian devil. It became the name of his God. Ar-Rahman was the moon god of the Yemenite Hanafs, who Muhammad plagiarized for his early surahs.
Okay, but now say that part again, because I have read some years back, a year ago, that in Mecca was a pagan culture, and they worshiped, like many pagans did, dozens of gods. And one of the gods was the moon god, Allah.
That's true. It's not dozens of gods. There were 360 gods in the Kaaba, according to the Islamic scripture. First, to put all this in perspective, there isn't a single word written about Mecca apart from the Islamic Hadith. The place is never mentioned in history. The Kaaba, even according to the Islamic Hadith, was nothing more than a rock pile, about 6 feet high, didn't have a roof, about 6 feet by 6 feet by 6 feet. And it inside of it, according to the Islamic Hadith, there was nothing but a pile of rocks those rocks were deemed to be gods. Allah himself being one of those rocks. Allah was a black meteorite rock, about a foot by 8 inches in size. And these Kaaba kind of temples to rock idols permeated Arabia. They're all a derivative of Sin. Sin was the name of the moon god of Ur, of the Chaldeans, the town that Abraham came from. Abraham literally fled Sin, who was the moon god, the principal deity of that town, when he trusted Yahweh and came to the promised land. So the remnant of all of that still permeated Arabia. Now this is 1,600, 1,800 years after Abraham had fled Ur and Sin. Muhammad was and his clan were still fixated on worshiping idols and moon deities. So Ar-Rahman, who was the moon deity of the Yemenites, the Hanifs, whom Muhammad plagiarized initially, became Muhammad's god, and everything in those intermediate surahs refers to God by the name Ar-Rahman. The R-H-M is a direct derivative of the Persian devil. What happened then is that in his little town of Mecca, which was maybe 5,000 people, all mud huts, not a single mortared brick in town, not a single building with a roof. This is world place. No one in the town was even literate. That in that place, the highest ranking idol was Allah, and then Allah had three daughters who were venerated almost on the same level: Alat, Manat, and Al-Uzza. One was the goddess of fate. One was the goddess of the moon. And these idols are all spoken about in the Book of Idols. They're also covered. Their names come up in the Quran. And so Muhammad's great-great-grandfather had created a religious scam, according to the Hadith, around Allah and this Kaaba and these pagan goddesses, where he was paid a tax. In fact, all of Islam's five pillars were established in this pagan scam by Muhammad's great-great-grandfather, Qusay. And Muhammad coveted that scam because it was the biggest money-making and power-contributing thing in town. But the people who had power in town didn't want Muhammad to have it. So what they said is, Muhammad, we'll make you a deal. You are causing division in this town. So if you will honor our gods, who are Allah, Manat, Al-Uzza, and Alat, we will share with you the three things you covet most. We'll give you sex, power, and money. And that's the Quraysh bargain. I cover that in the Satanic Bargain chapter of Prophet of Doom. Muhammad said, I need to think about it.
Now, and, Will, let me ask you, for the benefit of the audience, where are you getting these stories from?
I'm getting it from the Islamic scriptures. Now, understand that nothing is known about Muhammad. Nothing is known about Mecca. Nothing, literally nothing, apart from five books. The five books are Ibn Ishaq Sirah, which is biography in Arabic. It's the only book written about Muhammad within 200 years of his death. It is more essential to being a Muslim than the Gospels are to being a Christian. Then there's, because that book was lost, we have everything that was in that book by way of Ibn Hisham and Al-Tabari. Al-Tabari was the first scholar in Islam, and he did it, recorded an unedited version of Ibn Ishaq's writings. And so he is essential. And then there's two other hadith collections. Unfortunately, they are organized by topic and not by chronology, so they're tougher to use, but they're Bukhari and Muslim. And then you have the Quran, which purports to be Allah speaking through Gabriel to Muhammad. It is, in fact, nothing more than Muhammad's vivid imagination as he tries to justify his personal quest for sex, power, and money.
Okay, and so we've got the Quran, which we're generally familiar with the idea of the Quran, and then these other books are all called Hadith?
Hadith, that is correct. And there are two forms of Hadith. There are the biographical or narrative hadiths that are arranged in chronological order, and then there's the topical hadiths that are just arranged by subject. But those five books collectively are the sum total of what we know. So 100% of what I'm telling you is coming out of the Islamic scriptures out of those two sources.
Do you think that our congressman, do you think that George Bush, when he repeatedly refers to Islam as a religion of peace, that the God of Islam is the same God of the Christians and the Jews, do you think they've read these books and they know this information?
No. I am quite certain they have not. Now, George Bush has lied to the American people and said that he has read the Quran, and that based on reading the Quran, he says that Islam is a fine religion and we all worship the same God. Well, I don't know if he's read the Quran or not. I can tell you most certainly he has not read the Hadith. As even being a politician, it would be impossible to say such abominations to the American people if you had any clue as to what the truth was. So I believe that his presentation of Islam is based on both what is in his personal political interest and based on ignorance.
By the way,
neither one are justifiable.
By the way, Craig Wynn, and Craig is the author of the newest book, Prophet of Doom, Islam's Terrorist Dogma in Muhammad's Own Words. Craig, this past week, a number of the members of Denver Bible Church joined with a few hundred other Christians from around the country in Columbus, Ohio. And one of the things they were attempting to do was they were there to fight abortion.
Right.
And they attempted to get a permit to burn a copy of the Quran on the steps of the City Hall.
Right.
And what a mess controversy that caused with the mayor determined to not allow hate speech in his city.
Yeah, what's amazing is if the mayor had actually read the Quran, he would know that it is more hateful than is Hitler's Mein Kampf. It is the most racist and hateful book of all time. So,
yeah, condemning
by burning the Quran, it would be just like burning Mein Kampf.
Right.
You would be burning the primary source of hate speech in the world. But ignorance is a very debilitating tool. So this mayor, by his decree, prohibited you from burning hate speech with his proclamation. Now, to finish this thought about satanic verses, because I think it is the turning point of Islam, what Muhammad did is he came back the next day, and he changed gods. Ar-Rahman, the very name of the surah before the satanic verses, literally named in Ar-Rahman's honor, said Ar-Rahman created the heavens and the earth and all of this sort of thing. The next day, Muhammad comes out, and he accepts the bargain. Sex, power, and money, all he has to do now is change gods. And from this point on, all of the surahs, guess who's God? Allah, because that was the God of the Meccans. But he goes further. He says that Alat, Manat, and Al-Uzza, Allah's daughters, pagan idols all, were intermediaries to Allah, and therefore worthy of veneration. Now, the problem was that there were a half a dozen converts that were following Muhammad in Mecca at the time, and they said, wait a minute, that's at least three too many gods for a monotheistic religion. Something is wrong here, and by the way, you aren't willing to share the sex, power, and money with us, so we're complaining. Muhammad then, sometime thereafter, renounced his revelation. He says that the surah that he revealed was not from Allah, but was from Satan, and that Satan was the spirit who revealed the Quran to him. That's, therefore, it's called the Satanic Verses.
And this is when he went to his wife and said he was possessed?
No, he said he told his wife that he was possessed at the first revelation, which was it's in the 96th surah. And it's when Muhammad comes back and says that he was wrestled to the point of near death by a spirit, a nameless spirit,
right,
tried to commit suicide, ran home, and said he had been demon-possessed. This is now between 10 and 12 years later.
So the chapters in the Quran, again, are not in sequential order.
That's
first
right.
Revelation is the 96th chapter.
Yeah, it's actually the first six verses of the 96th surah, because the rest of it was revealed years later.
Okay,
so
but now
they're even disjumbled within themselves. So
okay.
Muhammad says that this was a revelation from Satan, and then he has another surah which Allah allegedly says, all of my messengers speak on behalf of Satan. And therefore, the Satanic Verses is a real episode in Muhammad's life where he admitted that he revealed Quran surahs based upon the inspiration of Satan, and later confirmed it, saying that all of Allah's messengers speak on behalf of Satan. And as a result of that, and as a result of reneging on the bargain he had made with his own tribe, the Quraysh, the Meccans ran Muhammad out of town. And when they ran him out of town, the first thing he did is form a union with a series of pagans bearing arms so that they would aid him in slaughtering his own kin. It's called the Pledge of Aqaba. Hmm. And from that point on, Islam ceases even the pretense of being a religion.
Now, let me understand this part. Mecca was a pagan culture. They had many idols.
Right.
And so who were the people who complained to Allah that now you have at least three too many gods?
Oh, see, over this 10 years that Muhammad had been revealing these Quran surahs in Mecca, he was unable to attract more than about 20 or 30 converts. In other words, everyone in town knew he was a fool. And they constantly called him a fool. And he did get about 15 people who were very flimsy in their faith. And he actually sent them to Abyssinia, which is today's Ethiopia, which is a Christian community, so they wouldn't be lured back away from his pretend religion. But within that town, there were three other men who were all fighters, warrior types, who had gone along with Muhammad because Muhammad promised them, and this is one of the most damning revelations in all of Islam, he promised all of those who followed him that the treasures of the world would be theirs by way of terror. And so he bribed three men to join his cause for their own personal benefit in terms of wealth, sex, power, and money. And there's these three men that complained when Muhammad accepted the Quraysh bargain.
Because Muhammad, during those 10 years, had been teaching a monotheistic
system. Well, it's to give him that much credit probably wouldn't be a good thing, because although Muhammad, in his initial surahs, plagiarized the Hanifs, which were considered to be monotheists, kind of a derivative of Judaism that was taught by a ruler back in Yemen, he parroted much of what the Hanifs had to say. And so if you were to give him credit, that would be about the maximum amount of credit you can could give him, is that he said that God was one, not 360, although the one that he picked happened to be Satan.
Okay, all right. Now, Craig, when he promised his followers the treasures of the world, sex and wealth, that sounds familiar, the 70 virgins that a lot of these jihadists think they're going to get in paradise. That sounds
similar.
The Quran
actually doesn't say 70 virgins. It just says multiple virgins, and 100% of the presentation of multiple virgins is in the Meccan surahs, where Muhammad goes into vivid detail about both the nature of hell and the nature of heaven. Both places require flesh, by the way. That's something that Satan is fixated on, is the flesh, because he cannot win in the spirit realm. He can only win in the world of the flesh. So heaven is a place where flesh is satiated. There are multiple virgins. They become virgins all over again, by the way, each time they're conquered, and they are there to satiate the desires of the Muslims. And the rivers in heaven flow with wine. Now, why in the world someone in their right mind would believe that the reward that God would provide in heaven is what he condemns here on earth, you will have to ask a Muslim, because it makes no sense to me.
In other words, drunken orgies. But
Craig, hell, by the way, is equally fixated on the flesh. In hell, every depiction of hell requires men to have their bodies reassembled so that they can be personally tortured by Allah. In fact, Allah says, I want to be left alone with my victims so that I can entertain them with my many varied tortures. And he goes on to describe all those.
So
tortures.
Allah is a sadistic God. Hey, we have figured out here at Babinert Live that when the suicide bombers say that they'll get 70 virgins,
right,
and now we have female suicide bombers occasionally,
right,
we figured out what they've been promised.
Oh, what is that?
They've been promised to opt out of being one of the 70.
Yeah.
They don't
actually
have to do
the
that.
Interesting thing is that according to the Quran, there are almost no women in paradise. Muhammad says that he's been to hell, which indeed he has, and that most of its inhabitants are women. Muhammad didn't like women very much. And he makes it clear that the virgins who satiate the desires of his martyrs in paradise are not earthly women. No, these are a special creation. That's because Muhammad had zero respect for women.
Wow.
And so if you, to be a Muslim woman, you have to literally be insane.
And contrast that to the scriptures and Jesus Christ and where men are to live for their wives and honor and respect and love them and sacrifice for them as Christ sacrificed himself for the church. And when we were in Turkey just a few weeks ago, we heard that Ataturk changed their law so that women could inherit property and if a parent died. And we pointed out that fully 3,000 years earlier, 3,500 years earlier, in the Mosaic Law, God pointed out that even though they had an agrarian society and things were different, that women could inherit land from their parents under various circumstances.
Correct. Well, Muhammad's last sermon, he tells his faithful that it is appropriate for men to beat their wives, that they can lock them in a closet, leave them naked, and starve them. He says that wives are for you to enjoy their bodies and are to be treated like domesticated animals.
That is just so despicable.
Everything in Muhammad's life is despicable. He is the antithesis of Christ's message. He is the antithesis of the Bible. The antithesis of Christ's message, the antithesis of the Bible is Satan. Muhammad, being possessed by Satan, everything he did, everything he said is satanic. That is the reason why Muslims today, his legacy, are blowing themselves up, murdering innocent people, because it is precisely what the devil would want them to do.
By the way, Craig, I mentioned on yesterday's show that years ago I went through a Penguin Classics version of the Quran.
Yes.
And it made no sense. Well, I dug that out of a box.
Good.
Last night. And this Penguin edition is from 1956. And they mention in here that these surahs, these chapters, are not in, not only not in chronological order, but they've reordered them for their American readers. And the last surah in this edition is called Prohibition.
Uh-huh.
And this is about, I reread this, and also there's an explanatory footnote in here from the Penguin editors, but that Muhammad was interested in this Coptic slave girl. We talked about this.
Right.
And Hafsa secretly informed Aisha, another wife of Muhammad's, what
was
going
on. Child wife.
Yeah.
That's one that was 6 years old when they got married.
Right. And now she's maybe 44 or so.
No. Muhammad only lived 10 years after he married her.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Oh, no. He only lived about 10 years after he married her.
Oh. I didn't realize that. So at any rate, the bottom line of this story is that Muhammad says that he has the right to take whatever Muhammad wants, and if his wives complain, then their doom, their fate will be hell.
Yeah. For that addition, to put that as the last surah in the book is without justification. While the surah exists in the Quran, the surah took place, the revelation chronologically took place in the middle of Muhammad's last 10 years while he was a terrorist. The second surah is the first surah revealed in Medina. The last surah revealed in Medina is the fifth surah, which Allah redefines his enemy. The enemy is no longer Jews because he had overhunted them. All the Jews were now dead. But was now instead Christians because they provided a much larger pool of wealth to be stolen, and that's the purpose of the fifth surah. Prohibition is in the midst of all of those when Muhammad had collected so many wives and so many concubines and so many sex slaves through his various terrorist raids that his harem was beginning to fall apart, and the community around him in Yathrib, today's Medina, was saying, you know, how in the world can you be a prophet and have such an immoral sex life? Hmm. And so the purpose of that surah was to quiet Muhammad's critics.
Yeah, so if I could read two quick quotes. It starts out, Prophet, or Allah basically is speaking to Muhammad. Muhammad, why do you prohibit that which Allah has made lawful to you in seeking to please your wives? And So he was trying to avoid, he claims, this Coptic slave girl because his wives were complaining. And then he goes on to tell his wives that if Muhammad, if I divorce you, the Lord will give me in your place better wives than you are.
Right.
And that's about the most despicable thing that a man could say to a wife, that yeah. you're going to agree with me taking young girls for sexual pleasure, or I'm going to divorce you and get better wives.
That's well. There's something far worse than him saying that.
Yeah.
And him saying that, yes. Well, there's two things far worse than him saying.
Yeah.
Him saying it is despicable. No right. question about it. Him doing it, which is what he did,
right.
is even more despicable.
Right.
But there's something far more despicable that has damned 3 billion souls to eternal separation with God.
Yeah.
He claimed that God told him that it was okay for him to have sex with whoever he pleased, and that if his wives didn't go along, that they would be damned. And because he said all of this perverse junk in the name of God, and because by sword people were forced to believe him,
right.
3 billion people have been eternally damned and separated from their Maker because of this man. That is why I hate him. That is why I expose what he has to say. Mm. That is why I wrote Prophet of Doom. That is why I am warning America, is that because this man claimed that his perverse quest for sex, power, and money was God's quest, the world has been damned.
All right, so let's give out your website. Prophet of Doom, the name of the title of your book.
Yeah.
Prophetofdoom.net.
Right.
.net. And your book, it could be, our people in the audience could get it at Amazon.com?
Yes, they can get it. They can read it free, by the way, on the site. Mm-hmm. It's a 1,000-page book, though. It is the most comprehensive and best-documented presentation of Islam scriptures ever written.
Yeah, the free online version is neat, but it's hard. It's much easier to read it if you get a copy.
No question. You can go to Amazon, and you can go to almost any Christian bookstore mm-hmm. and get Prophet of Doom or Tea with Terrorists. The difference between the two is the Tea with Terrorists describes my meeting with Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, and it provides a solution that we can implement as believers to save America from Islamic terror. It has a 1, 2, 3. Here's what we need to do if we wish to save America from Islamic terror.
All right.
And it's a contemporary view of Islam and terrorism. Prophet of Doom is instead a comprehensive, the most comprehensive review of the Islamic scriptures so that all of America would be without excuse, so we would know that this is a satanic cult.
Craig Wynn, thank you for writing these books, and we'd love to have you on sometime in the future.
My pleasure.
God bless you. Really appreciate that. Craig Wynn, author of Prophet of Doom and Tea with Terrorists. So, hey, thanks for supporting Bob and Yurt Live and making programs like this possible. If you enjoy what we're doing here, well, you're welcome to visit our website at KGOV, KGOV.com. And there at KGOV, you can check out our online catalog, or you can call us or write to us and ask for a copy of our catalog. 800-8-NYART is the number, 800-836-9278. And you're invited to Denver Bible Church also this Sunday. This is Bob Enyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.